Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net on the campus of Seton Hall University. Oh, we are so excited this morning because we have a radio legend on the line with us today, Mr. Pinky Kravitz, the communicator at Pinky's Corner. Mr. Kravitz, welcome to the program, and thank you for interrupting your extremely busy schedule and joining us to share your thoughts and insights on leadership, especially in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Thank you very much, Darrell. I appreciate the opportunity of being here with you.
You know, I can recall when I was a little boy that you had a telethon that you were hosting, and me and a couple of my friends, we were doing a martial arts demonstration, and I just remember just how kind and warm you were to us to have us on your telethon. We really enjoyed that. And you have been really one of the key voices in Southern Jersey, especially Atlantic City. So it's really a privilege and an honor to have you on my program.
Well, when you're here for a long period of time, that certainly helps. And those were wonderful days at that time. We did it for quite a few years, raised a lot of money over the period of time, and you get involved in a lot of different projects as one goes along. If you're talking about leadership, sometimes you have to be a follower or jump in with what people are doing in your community, and particularly you have to learn by being involved with other people. And so all of these things that I've been involved in and have done basically come by just nothing individually. It's always getting people to join together to do whatever had to be done at that particular time.
And you have always been at that front line, and we thank you for that. For the benefit of our worldwide audience that we have, because I have friends in Amsterdam, I have friends in Brazil who listen to the program, could you give our audience some insights on the highlights of your education and your career?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I played basketball at New York University, or at Atlantic City High School, graduated from Atlantic City High School during the war years in 1944. There weren't too many of the excellent athletes, because many of them were in the armed forces, so I had the opportunity to win a scholarship to New York University playing basketball. I left after the first year to go into the Army and serve some 9 months, and then several years later, and I was released in September of 45, and then I was then put into the Army again for the Korean conflict, because I didn't serve a full year the first time in, so they brought me back for 2 years from 51 to 53. That helped me a great deal, being in the service and learning a lot of things and how to do things and whatever it was that you did. You did it with a group. You also had to show your individuality as well, and that helped me tremendously. So I left there from New York University. I came back to Atlantic City as a teacher and taught for 28 years. But in the meantime of teaching, I started with a salary of $2,400 a year.
Wow.
At that time, $2,400 wasn't that bad as it sounds, because you could buy more with your dollars. So things were a lot cheaper. You know, you bought you got a nickel, you got a lot of candy, you got whatever you wanted, cigarettes. I don't smoke, but they would cost maybe 12, 14 cents a pack. So that made a big difference for a lot of people. But you learned to appreciate what you had. And then when, as the time went on, I was coaching a young basketball team for the Biddy Basketball out of Atlantic City with Atlantic City Youngsters. We won the World Championship that year in 1956.
Wow.
And then came back to Atlantic City with the Youngsters, and there was a gentleman waiting there and said, would you like to, says you handle kids well. He said, and we need people to help us in a record hop that we want to have. And he said, we'd like you to manage it. So I did that. I managed the record hop, and kids would come and dance, and we had a lot of fun. And it also gave me an entree to radio, because we broadcasted it from there.
Oh.
I had a man that was doing it from one of the stations. The second year, he asked me back to manage it a second year, and I said, okay. But I said, I'm going to spin the records and put them on the radio. We don't need him, and we don't have to pay for him. So that got me my entree to radio. And I started then, and I began a night show. Interesting little part was that at that time I was working, the station that I started with did not have sufficient money to have the word, when someone would call, you couldn't hear what they were saying because he didn't have that equipment. So I had to repeat. Someone would call and I'd say, so you think the world is flat? No, the world is round. And I'd be talking to myself because realistically, I did not have anybody calling me. And it took me a while till people started to hear it, and then they would join in, and then I started getting calls. So I am now in my 55th year of broadcasting, 84 with the one station, WOND, and the first year with the WLDB. But I've done straight radio, I've done disc jockey work, I did sports, and all of that. Then when television came along and I was teaching, they bought television equipment at the school system, and they threw it at me and said, use it. We used to go into classrooms, and we would show children doing a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a system here where people could watch it on television in their homes. We had a cable system, and they would put it on for us. Well, the nice thing was that it would induce children to do well because then their parents were watching, their friends were watching, and they had to act properly. They studied. We also did a spelling bee on television for the children. Then the children started picking up, and teachers would tell me, we would only take the best spellers out of a class, and we would challenge another class with them. The winner would get a big dictionary that the Board of Education provided.
Very nice.
So in doing this, why, it worked out very nicely for us, and kids wanted to get involved on television, so they were studying spelling, and teachers told us there was a definite impression that the kids had about this. So it was really neat to be able to do that type of thing and get started. And that started me in doing television work, which I now do, and I'm still doing after all these years, where I do interviews with varied people in political worlds and chefs, a variety of people within the community, with young people and adults. And it's been a lot of fun to be able to do that over the years. So that basically is what I have done in my field of endeavor.
But you also are a columnist as well for Atlantic City Weekly, correct?
Yeah, well, I'm no longer for the Atlantic City Weekly. Last year, back in July, a year and a half now, I was offered the opportunity to move my column to the Press of Atlantic City.
Yes, yes.
So I'm now in the daily newspaper. Every Thursday, my column is out. It's called Pinky's Corner. And by the way, you can get it on the Internet. Just go to Press of Atlantic City, Press of AC. .com, and then type in Pinky's Corner, and you'll be able to read what we write every Thursday, and we write things about the city, about what's going on, and making people aware of my particular thoughts about what we're doing and how to do.
Well, you know, I have dedicated a number of shows to discussing Atlantic City. I'm an Atlantic City resident as well. My mother raised our family there with my father. We had the store called Gunter's Market on Ohio Avenue, and my mom is still there, my sister's still there, and I'm always very concerned about the direction of Atlantic City. And you are probably one of the most vocal advocates of Atlantic City, and that's why I'm so happy to have you on the program. But if you could, for me, could you outline what you think are the key issues that the city is facing?
Well, right now, 30 years ago, when we went into the gaming industry, everything was going well, but the city basically was being told what to do and how to do by the state. And for 30 years, it's been that way. When they first started with the casinos in Atlantic City, we were the only ones in the East to have it. Today, just about every state in the East has casinos. The big thing now is to how do we get it so that people will continue to come back to Atlantic City? And that is by having good hotels that are run nicely, a lot of entertainment that is in the city, wonderful restaurants with some of the top chefs in the world that are working in these casinos and are following their menus. Those are the kinds of things that will help Atlantic City. I just came from the governor of State of New Jersey, Chris Christie, was in Atlantic City, and they had just appointed someone to be the new head of the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority. And so he was telling us about what they anticipate Atlantic City will be doing. And the president of the Senate, Stephen Sweeney, was there, and I was talking to him afterwards. In fact, he will be coming in to do my show within 2 weeks. He'll be coming by to visit with me. So, and the governor also, they had the press man for the governor said that we'll be calling you not too distant future with the governor to do an interview with you. But the big thing is that we need to take what we have and take advantage of it. There are very few casinos in states that have what we have, the beach and the ocean, the boardwalk. It's just been voted the best boardwalk in the country, and I would think in the world, because I don't know many countries that have a boardwalk similar to what we do.
You know, one of the issues that Atlantic City suffers from is really poor marketing.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because, and you're right, it has been. And it just, the perception of Atlantic City is horrible.
It is.
And it comes from some of the people within the city, but also in the factor that we have not done the kind of things that need to be done. Out of all the people in the northeastern portion, and there are millions of people, when you look at it, we have only delved into them to about 15% of them have ever come to Atlantic City. And there's so much for them to do and to see, and we have not done the jobs. I'm happy to inform you that since Atlantic City's casinos no longer have to provide money for the racetracks, because the racetrack is a dying industry, wherever they put in these video lottery terminals and the slot machines and racetracks, people don't go there to see the races. Where they go to put the money in a slot machine.
Right.
So that's paying for those horses and paying for the purses that they give.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a drain on them, and they've had to do it for $15 million every year. There's been money put up for $30 million. So as a result, that money, which comes to $30 million for a year, will now be used for marketing. So that they no longer are giving it to the racetracks, and the governor sent this up. No longer will that money go to the racetrack. That money, the casinos still have to put up that money.
Mm-hmm.
It will be used for marketing, that the casinos will oversee how that marketing money is to be spent, whether on television or where it's going to be and how it's going to be. And that's going to be a major factor in helping to change the viewpoint that people have of Atlantic City.
You know, with that, Atlantic City has to deal with the issue of its crime. It's such a small town, but with such a high crime rate. What are your thoughts in regards to how we can make it better?
Well, the crime rate is really not that high. When you measure it against other cities for the number of people, some people measure it against the 30,000 or 35,000 that are residents of Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
Every day in Atlantic City, we have well over 100,000 people here.
Right.
Every single day.
Right.
Over the year, we had over 30 million visitors who come to Atlantic City. When you take it in the context of the number of people that are here, it is altogether different when you say, oh, you have a high crime rate. It is not a high crime rate. In fact, there are cities in Cape May County whose crime rates are higher because they have a smaller number of people, and therefore it's measured against them. If they just have one crime, it really stands out for them.
So
we do not have the highest rate of crimes in the state of New Jersey, nowhere near it. But the nice thing is the governor, in his wisdom, and the state police put a man in Atlantic City to oversee it. They call him a commander, and they have a tourism district now. The area from that in certain areas, the business areas, the tourism areas, have been put under one. The city still has all the police department, and they work in unison together with this commander and some detectives that he has working with him. And they're now going into distinct areas of the community that have had the high crime rate, and they are going after those who are doing this. And they are dedicated to cleaning it up. So it's a matter of safety, and it's a matter of cleanliness.
Yes, yes.
We have a tremendous job in cleanliness, and we are working on it. They have just cleaned up parts of the inlet with, I can't recall the number of trucks of trash that they took when they decided, when this group took it over.
Mm-hmm.
So we're after all of those things, and where the areas that they've had a lot of problems, why they are going after them as well. So it's something that I think you're going to see a lot big change within the next couple of years.
Well, that is great to hear. Along with having great hotels, great restaurants, great food, and having a low crime rate, service is also important. What is the plan that you've heard that's going to address the quality of service that folks are receiving when they come to Atlantic City, whether it's from the taxi cab to the jitney person, to the 7-Eleven store, or going right into the casinos with the help in the casino?
Well, that is a major factor. The casinos are constantly after their people. They go to classes. They're constantly saying, this is your lifeblood. This is how you make your money. We need these people to come back. One person being turned away becomes someone that will let 10 people know that they did not have a good time. In the same vein, if you have one person that really enjoyed themselves, had a special time, the people were polite, were pleasant, and it was great to deal with them, the restaurants were good, they just will be able to spread that around. And that goes as a spokesperson for you. And that's the way to turn it around. And the college we have, Stockton College, has been conducting classes as well within the community so that they have a way of putting it together and make sure that the people who are working in the industry are promoters of the what they have to offer. And that's one of the things we're looking forward to as well.
Well, it sounds like next summer is going to be a very promising summer for Atlantic City. And in your opinion, what are the key things that Atlantic City needs to do to increase their traffic during the off season, which is the winter season?
Well, just what we're talking about, doing events, and that's the nice thing. For example, in March is a very big month here. March, we have the New Jersey State Interscholastic Athletic Association's wrestling championships. That draws maybe 40 or 50,000 people. They're all high school kids, and they wrestle for their championships. And we, over Friday right through Sunday, these youngsters are here. Their families come to see them, and that's been tremendous. That's followed up by the Big Eight tournament that we have, the basketball tournament, featuring the colleges in the northeastern part of the country. And following that, we have the hockey tournament for those up in the northeast and those who have hockey. We have their championship that is comes to Atlantic City. And then the fourth week, or the first week in April, we now have a rodeo. Last year was the first time we had a rodeo in Atlantic City. People said, oh, won't draw, nobody will be it. There are a lot of, you know, and many times when you do something, the naysayers, the negative people stand out and speak. But this is one time when the negative people had to swallow their tongues because it drew over 17,000 people over the three-day period it was here. And that was a tremendous crowd for them. Next year, it'll be even bigger.
Wow, that sounds very, very...
There was a whole bevy of different events. Every weekend, there was something in that month of March going into April, and the town was just jumping with it. We had a music festival that had never been held before at Bader Field, and you know how big Bader Field is.
Yes, yes.
400 acres.
Yes.
We had David Matthews Group together with 15 other bands that performed. We had over 75,000 people that came to them. Now they're going to do it again next year, the fourth weekend, June 22nd, 23rd, 24th. We don't know who the band will be. It could be Fish. It could be Tim McGraw. It could be David Matthews again. We don't know who it is, but whoever it is, it'll be a first-class orchestra or band that is going to draw the people. And we had such a great time with all those people. We had no incidents. The people were great, and it was just a lot of fun all the way around. So that's another thing that we have. And now they're also going to start some. We have an air show.
Oh.
It was held in August.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we drew 800 800,000 people that came to Atlantic City to see the air show.
800,000.
800,000 people were in Atlantic City. You couldn't get an inch on the beach. Every inch was taken. Thousands and thousands of people walking on the boardwalk throughout the day. And we preceded it because we had mostly armed forces planes that were doing exhibitions, and as well as some of the stunt pilots. But before that, on Monday, for the very first time, we had Atlantic City Salutes, America's Armed Forces Parade. And here again, this is something that I championed and did. And I put it together, and together with some people, that just a small committee of people, we were able to put this thing on. I went out and helped to raise the money for it. And we had a parade that lasted an hour and a half. And we started when it was nice and dry. The sun was out. Within a half hour, as we're going down the boardwalk, the rain started, a light rain. The people stayed on the boardwalk in a light rain to watch the parade. There wasn't one marcher that walked off the boardwalk because of the rain.
Wow.
They all stayed there. They ran through the whole parade. And next year, it'll even be bigger and better on the Monday preceding our air show. Those are the kinds of things that will bring people to Atlantic City.
I fully agree. Speaking about marketing, has the governor or the new executive director of the CDRA, have they appointed a marketing czar?
No, but there will be somebody that will be working on that. I came up with something I had been recommending for a while, and that's to have a special person that will run the events for Atlantic City. So that all of these different events that we have, you need somebody to tell people how to go, how to get the licenses they need from the police department, the fire department, the health department, if they have food. All of those things need to be done.
Yes.
And so I just learned today the CRDA has just put that on their list to have. They are going to have somebody they're going to hire to do that type of thing. The other thing, when you talk about leadership, the thing that happens is when there are events that are taking place, get yourself involved with them.
Yes.
I always was involved in something going on. I remember very well back in 1970 when we were celebrating the 100th anniversary of the boardwalk in Atlantic City, and we wanted to do something very special for the boardwalk. So we said, okay, we're going to have a different event every month. And so I said, well, we used to have a bow mask where people would dress in costumes. I said, why don't we do that? They said, okay, you're the chairman.
Okay.
You're the chairman. So I was the chairman. I put together a small group of people, and we made it a success. We had it for 13 years. We were bringing people to Atlantic City in February and in March. When they wouldn't come, we'd have 500, maybe 1,000 people who would come for the ball mask. Those were 500 or 1,000 people that stayed in the hotels that didn't have anybody.
Right.
And they came at good rates and had a good time with it. At the same vein, then something else comes along, and you say, okay, we're going to get involved with this. And that was with the telethons were there at that particular time. We were doing those as well.
Mm-hmm.
So as these things develop, get yourself involved in one of the charitable groups. Join one of the organizations. Get in the Junior Chamber of Commerce when you're young. Up until 35 now, I believe it is, that you can be in the Chamber of Commerce, Junior Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up being the president of it. And it was just a treat to be able to do this. But I learned to work with other people. So that you worked with all kinds of people and got together to make it all the better for you to be able to be a part of what you wanted to be in the community.
Very nice. And what are your thoughts about the current elected leadership in Atlantic City? Do you consider this leadership there to be visionary, or do you find that maybe they're hurting the success?
No, I don't think they're hurting the success. I don't know that they're as visionary as one might be, but the way that the government is set up, it's very difficult. The mayor has to get the approval of the the city council, and then there's always bickering between the two. But if you can get the government to work properly, it can work out very nicely. And again, here is where you need people to work. You need people in the community to come to the city meetings and say to them, we want this. Why is my street not being cleaned?
Right.
Why is it that this isn't going on? Or what, you're having events up on the boardwalk, but you don't have any in the community. So what did they do this year? They had wonderful events. They brought the Temptations. They brought big name acts to Gardner's Basin,
mm-hmm.
where they could have over 1,000 people come out and enjoy free entertainment.
Oh, wow.
Saturday evening. And that's what they did at Gardner's Basin. Then they moved, they show movies in districts in the community. They have a screen that can go up, it blows up, and so they play movies in neighborhoods, in the ballpark of a neighborhood or a park that is in a neighborhood. And they do it on a whatever night of the week they can do it. And you find out that that brings a couple hundred people to come out, sit and watch the old family movies.
Right.
Some in black and white, some in color, whatever it may, Technicolor, whatever it may be. But at least you're doing something for the community. And that's what's so important.
You know, speaking about recent events, as you know, the HBO series Boardwalk Empire really shows Atlantic City in its heyday and in some very good ways, and also in regards to prohibition stuff. It always has pondered my mind why the show was not shot in Atlantic City.
Very simple. The show is in the era of 1920. There isn't anything left on the boardwalk from the 1920 era. I was invited up to see the set of Boardwalk Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a treat to be able to do that. And I was very impressed. But what they had was the stores of that era.
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
seeing on that show is from 1920. We on our boardwalk have the stores of 2000.
Right, right.
So that wouldn't fit. And that's why it never was put into Atlantic City. So I would also like you to know that there was another thing I did that I was very happy to get involved with, and that was when I saw the show, I was really impressed with it, and people would come to Atlantic City and say, well, where is that store?
Right.
Or where was the Ritz? Or where is
right.
this? And there were very few places for people to take pictures relative to Boardwalk Empire.
Right.
I came up with the idea of having a facade made of the Boardwalk Empire stores. I wrote to HBO, and I got into a conversation with them. It took me many months for me to convince them to allow me to have the pictures. Once I received the pictures, I figured, now what do I do? So a friend of mine told me, you have to have it like a billboard. Build a facade right on the boardwalk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I'm happy to tell you that on August the 1st of this year, we had a facade put up of 9 of the stores on the boardwalk. And as you walk down our boardwalk, you'll see people stopping right up in front of the boardwalk hall. And you will see the facades of Boardwalk Empire. And in fact, it's going over so well, there are so many people taking pictures of it, that they now want to expand it. I went to a gentleman, the Interstate Outdoor Advertising Group, and I talked with them about it, and they said, Pinky, we'll be happy to help you because we think it's a great idea. They put it together. They brought the cost down to $20,000. The owner of the Interstate Outdoor Advertising said, look, I'll put up $10,000. You have to get the other $10,000. As soon as I made it public in my column that I write, I had a gentleman call me. He said, I'll give you $5,000 for it. Somebody else came up with the rest, and so I was able to get $10,000. We paid them, and that is now on our boardwalk. And I'm happy to tell you, with all the wind, with all the storm that we just had last week, that is still standing today.
Wow. Ladies and
next time you come back to Atlantic City, you have to go up on a boardwalk and take a look, and you'll see the facade of those stores from the Boardwalk Empire show.
I certainly will. Believe it or not, Pink.